Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right. First episode in a few weeks where it's just been me. We've had, 3 interviews in a row now, and each one was great in its own way. I hope you've enjoyed the interviews. If you like that format especially, please reach out and let me know. BreakingDownCollapse@gmail.com is a fine place for feedback. You can also reach out to me on X, which I need to leave that place, but I haven't yet. So yeah, if you do or you don't like those, I would love to hear your thoughts. Last week, we did an interview with Dr. Robert Mead on heat waves and on wet bulb temperatures, which was super interesting. And the week before that, we had Dr. Janice Brainy, which was also just a lot of fun to talk about those microplastics. And so those two were primarily research-based interviews, you know, working with doctors who research these things. Now Janice Brainy, and I don't know how I got ahead of myself here on the slides. Janice Brainy, she obviously, we talked more about the environmental proliferation and a little bit on the impacts of microplastics in the environment. That was her primary field of study. If you haven't listened to that one, go listen to it. It was a lot of fun. And always just a quick pitch here. If you're new to the podcast, if you're finding us on YouTube right now for the first time, we're talking about some pretty niche topics within the idea of societal collapse episode by episode. If you want to get an idea of the thesis of what we're talking about here when we say collapse, go listen to the first 8 episodes of this podcast and then come back. So yeah, this interview with Janice, obviously it wasn't primarily around the health impacts, and that's what we're going to talk about more today. And I am hoping to be able to speak with a researcher who has done work on the health impacts, who is currently studying this. I've reached out to one, I didn't hear back, so I'm going to continue reaching out and hope that in the next couple of weeks or next few weeks, we may be able to speak with somebody on this topic. So look forward to that if it comes. But for now, you're stuck with me, a fairly uneducated non-expert on the topic. But I've done my research, I found my numbers, and we're going to talk about some of these items. So this is just an introduction as far as the agenda. How are microplastics introduced into our bodies? How much is there in our bodies? What are the known issues? And where could it all potentially lead? We did an episode on microplastics a few years ago. It's an evolving field, and things are changing. The numbers are changing. The severity and the impacts, we're finding more of that out. Unfortunately, research takes a long time, and getting a good amount of studies that can be duplicated and you know, when you're studying the long-term impacts of something, sometimes it takes the long term to be able to measure and really understand what's happening. So there have been some updates, and we'll go through those today. So first, let's recap kind of how are microplastics introduced into our bodies. Well, there's a few different ways. The main one is through ingestion, so eating or drinking. Seafood are especially high in microplastics because there's so much of it in the oceans and they directly consume it themselves. So when we consume them, we consume microplastics. It says, I'm just going to kind of read off my slides here. Marine animals like fish and shellfish can ingest microplastics in the ocean, which then end up in our own food. Salt. Table salt, especially sea salt, can contain microplastic particles. Bottled water and tap water. Microplastics have been detected in both bottled and tap water. Food packaging. Plastic containers and packaging can shed particles into food, especially when heated, like microwaving plastic. I think this is all pretty apparent. You know, you're probably aware of this. One thing that's interesting, well, actually, I'm going to wait a slide or two to mention that. So we'll get there. Number 2 is inhalation, indoor and outdoor air. Especially in dust and fibers from synthetic clothing, upholstery, and plastic materials. So this is fascinating. When talking to Dr. Brainey, you know, she really, her whole research was on dust. And as I'm sitting here talking to you, and the sun is shining in behind me, I'm seeing fibers floating around in the air. I'm seeing dust particles, and it's kind of crazy when you see, you know, we're used to seeing that. We're used to the air not being completely clear and pure, and there's stuff floating around all the time, right? But it kind of hit me when she talked about how much of our dust is actually microplastics. And to know that every time I take a breath, I am breathing in not just dust that my body can expel, but I'm breathing in microplastic materials. So yeah, fascinating and interesting, and it makes me feel a little bit claustrophobic. Textile fibers from polyester clothing can be released during normal wear and washing and can be breathed in. So I'll kind of mention this, what I was going to say in the last slide now. We purchased for our children for Easter, which, by the way, when I was growing up, Easter was like, you know, you got like a hard-boiled egg, and my parents would like buy us a kite or something like that, which was really cool. We had a blast with that. But suddenly it feels like, and I know it's not this way for everybody, but Easter's like Christmas. Like all the families I know, and my family apparently now too, it's like we're buying all of these gifts. Anyway, we bought them these little microscopes. They're really kind of cool, actually. And they're handheld, it's just a battery, got a light that turns on, and then you can twist it to focus, but you can put it anywhere, and it's a functional microscope. I have no idea the, you know, how far in am I zooming. I wish that I could like see the measurement and know how many microns something was I was looking at. These are kids' microscopes that are shaped like a bunny for Easter, apparently. Anyway, I just started having a blast with it. I was like looking at everything. I was looking at my skin. I was looking at the tabletop. I was looking at my phone. I was looking at the leather of the couch and all these different things. But one of the things that fascinated me most as I was looking at it was clothing. You know, I'm wearing this like long sleeve sort of sweaterish type material, and I just never paid that close of attention. And when you're looking through a microscope, you're paying very, very close attention. And, you know, zooming in on the whole width of the screen that I was looking at, I'm guessing was probably a couple hundred microns. And the reason I'm guessing that is, or maybe several hundred microns, because a hair, one of my own hairs, when I looked at it, was very, you know, it's very thick. It's taking up like, I don't know, a fifth of the screen, right? Or something like that. 10% of the screen is just one single hair. So I know an hair is somewhere around 70 microns on average. So I'm going into too much depth. My point is, I was very far zoomed in and looking at my clothing, seeing how many fibers there are within each individual thread that I cannot see with my naked eye. As hard as I try, I cannot discern that. But you get in there and you just see that, holy cow, within this one little, you know, it's probably like the size of a pea is the whole size of my screen. And within that, I'm literally looking at thousands and thousands of individual fibers. And I know that those are just shedding off of my clothes like crazy. I looked at a little tiny piece of lint that I had on my hand, right? And that little piece of lint in itself was hundreds of pieces of individual fibers. So, yeah, just a really interesting concept. If you ever are around a microscope like that or in a lab or something, take a look at your clothing and just consider the amount of microplastics that are involved there and multiply that by the billions of people in the world and the dozens of articles of clothing that each one of them may own on average. I want to do some more research into what type of clothing is not going to have as much microplastics in it. I'll admit, just straight up, I'm not very knowledgeable in that area. And I am not that, I haven't been that good about being concerned about my purchases and being, what's the word I'm trying to think of, you know, conscious and aware of what I'm buying for my own health and for the health of the planet. But I need to get better at that. And sometimes it takes looking under a microscope to understand it. Okay. Last way that we can introduce microplastics into our bodies is through the skin. This is less common, but theoretically possible. Some cosmetic products like exfoliants used to contain microbeads, though many countries have now banned them. Dr. Brandy and I were talking about this. Cosmetics, paint, there's all sorts of things, deodorants and things like that, that can contain microbeads, and you're literally purposely applying them to your skin. Touching contaminated water or plastic particles might allow trace amounts to pass through open wounds or damaged skin, though this is likely minimal compared to ingestion or inhalation. On that note, again, going back to this microscope, I had a little cut on my finger, and it's like dry skin that kind of opened up because it was so dry and cracked. And, you know, just from the naked eye, it just looks like a little cut, like a little red or whatever. Well, I stuck that bad boy under the microscope, and it's full of stuff. Like, that little cut has got all sorts of junk in it, including fibers. I found fibers in my little cut. And so, yeah, it makes sense that depending on the size of those fibers, if I'm seeing them stuck inside this little cut, then of course, to some degree, they are going to make their way inside. They may heal over and be embedded in the skin as the body heals. So anyway, really interesting. How much remains in our bodies? This is a huge question. First of all, when we talk about just how much we intake in the first place, one study estimates that we ingest between 39,000 and 52,000 microplastic particles per year just from eating and drinking alone. So just from ingestion. If we count inhalation into those numbers, it could be more like 100,000 particles. So, of course, microplastics come in so many different sizes, some that may be visible to the eye, some that are extraordinarily small that you would not see. And about 100,000 of those particles, according to this study, being taken into our body on an annual basis. There are not currently any studies to show how many microplastics enter through our bloodstream, but this is sort of currently an area of exploration. We talked about this other study that was done back in 2019 on the last podcast. We talked about microplastics, but they estimate that we may ingest as much as 5 grams or 1 credit card's worth of microplastics each week. Haven't seen any new research to sort of duplicate that or corroborate that. Doesn't mean it's not true. That is an awful lot of microplastics. And I don't know how many thousands of microplastics it would take to weigh 5 grams or equal a credit card. No matter how you look at it, as this research continues to be done, and maybe we'll refine these numbers further and further, we're taking in a lot into our bodies that are not natural. So how much accumulates and stays in the body is the next question. This is an area of active research because it is not yet known. There's not a lot of even estimates on this because think about it. How do you research that? It's extraordinarily difficult, and especially because there are so many different types, not just sizes, but types of microplastics with different chemicals that are ingested or brought into the body in different ways. So studying and analyzing what of that is excreted, what of that is withheld, how much of that makes its way through the blood-brain barrier, how much of it sits in the bloodstream, how much of it gets put into our other systems. Hopefully we find answers to that so that we can know then from there, you know, how much does it take to do damage? How can we actively keep it out of our system, etc. So microplastics bigger than 150 microns, which is 2 times the diameter of the average hair, is what is known to be typically excreted. It's too big. It's not going to make its way into a permanent part of our body. It's going to be removed. The gut acts as a partial barrier, and microplastics have been observed in human stool around the world. So I'm glad that I'm not involved in this study, but somebody has taken human stool from multiple countries all over the world, stuck it under a microscope and said, you know, counted them out, the microplastics there. The gut acting as a partial barrier, basically, you know, you can picture it as a filter, and it is moving things through as long as they are a certain size, which in this case, 150 microns. Now, when we talked to Dr. Brainy, she was mostly focused on very small, you know, like a micron or a few microns, which that is not visible to the naked eye. 1 micron is 175th the size of the width of an average hair. And so, yes, these are very, very small particles. Nanoplastics. Among the most concerning are microplastics smaller than 150 microns and nanoplastics. It is believed they are more likely to remain in the body or have the potential to cross the blood-brain barrier. Now, there are a lot of variability and unknowns, and this is where, again, doing this research and finding these studies is very difficult. Age, health status, gut biome, diet, exposure levels, etc. will all affect how much remains. Retention times are still being studied and whether our bodies chemically alter the microplastics. So, which is interesting, and wow, I've got some typos in this slide, my apologies, but you know, our body, as it reacts to the microplastics, can physically change the chemical makeup of that microplastic, right? As we break it down, as we decay it or whatever. And likewise, the microplastic and those chemicals can be causing changes in our bodies. So there are thousands of different types of microplastics, as I mentioned, all with different chemical makeups. So each can affect us differently. How do you do research, you know, and say, okay, taking in a certain amount of microplastics over the course of 30 years is going to increase the likelihood of dementia, for example. When there are thousands of different types of microplastics, all with different chemicals, which are all going to cause a very different type of reaction, right? A person who might live in a city might be exposed to very different types of microplastics than someone who is not. Someone who always wears polyester clothing with microplastic fibers shedding, and maybe they always wear a cheap brand of clothing that sheds them much more frequently, they may take in a lot more of a certain type of microplastics than someone who lives, you know, I don't know, that doesn't wear clothes very often or that lives in a place with, you know, better homemade, you know, cotton type clothing, something like that. So anyway, it just, you can see why the research is so difficult when the variables are hard to overcome. Now, when we talk about the effects that this could have on our health, there are multiple. I've got two slides here on this one. So one is inflammation and immune response. So immune system activation, the body treats microplastics as foreign invaders, which can trigger chronic inflammation, and then also gut inflammation. Ingested particles can disrupt the gut lining or microbiome. So yeah, I mean, we talk about that inflammation, your body's trying to react, it's trying to expel these things. There's either too many of them or your body doesn't recognize them, doesn't know how to eject them, or even improperly ejecting them, it's still going to cause an immune response and can cause inflammation. And we're seeing a rise in immune deficiencies and those types of things, and this could exacerbate that. Oxidative stress. So microplastics can generate reactive oxygen species, which damage cells and DNA, potentially increasing the risk of cancer, cardiovascular disease, and neurodegenerative conditions. I think cancer is kind of an obvious one. That is, we introduce a bunch of chemicals into our body. We don't know how long they're going to stay there, how our body's going to react, how they're interacting with our cells, but cancer is a big concern, obviously. Hormone disruption. So many plastics contain hormone-mimicking chemicals like BPA. I don't never know how to say this. Is it just phthalates? I'm just going to say phthalates. And flame retardants. These substances can interfere with reproductive health, thyroid function, and development, especially in fetuses and children. A lot of the research that we've seen is in fetuses, and you know, just the fact that even before a child is born, they are already, you know, they're coming from the womb with microplastics in their system, passed through the umbilical cord by their mother. That's pretty heavy to know that you're, before you're even starting in the world, you're already interacting with microplastics. And then when you talk about the interference with reproductive health, right, that's really scary because now we're talking about, you know, Handmaid's Tale, Children of Men type situation of a world where reproduction is becoming more and more difficult. We're already living in a world where naturally reproduction is decreasing because less people are either able or would like to have kids. But we're also seeing an effect on fertility rates amongst those who are trying. And Dr. Shanna Swan, which by the way, I have tried to reach out to her for an interview, and her contact information on her website is no longer viable, like her email doesn't work. So if anyone knows how to contact Dr. Swan, I want to do a full episode interview with her on reproductive health. So reach out to me if you've got that. Okay, organ damage. So studies in animals and lab models have shown accumulation in the liver, kidney, brains, and lungs, leading to tissue damage, inflammation, and metabolic disruption. Lung exposure from inhaled fibers may contribute to respiratory issues and reduce lung function. So many of our medical issues come from organs not functioning as they are supposed to, right? And we don't yet know the effects of microplastics on all of our organs. But I think as the accumulation of those increase, as they get built up in the system over time, we will probably see an increased likelihood of organ damage or failure, though, which can lead to things like sepsis and all of that. Neurotoxicity. Emerging research suggests nanoplastics may cross the blood-brain barrier, potentially impacting brain function. Studies in mice have shown changes in behavior, memory, and inflammation in the brain after exposure to nanoplastics. So, yeah, in the short life cycle of a mouse, being able to pump a bunch of nanoplastics in and seeing the effect in the longer term, human lifespan, it's yet to be seen exactly. I mean, we've already seen an increase in Alzheimer's, right? We've seen an increase in dementia, and it's happening at a younger age. Is it from microplastics? Is it from COVID-19? Is it from other chemicals, or is it, from pesticides? I don't know. And again, all it could be a compounding effect of all of these things. And to me, what's really scary is that while we right now are sort of on the tail end of decades and decades of plastics pollution and an increase in CO2 in the atmosphere and, an increase in pesticides and all these things, we're still, because it's an exponentially growing problem in each of these areas, by the time, I'm 35 now, so by the time I hit 60 or 70, the problem could be double, it could be quadruple or more. And so who knows what sort of tipping points and what sort of feedback loops are happening in our bodies that could really cause some like significant health issues in the future. We're not able to identify all of those at this point. And but yeah, it's just one of those things that we don't know what could come for us physically. Reproductive and developmental effects. So going back to this, animal studies have shown effects on fertility, sperm quality, and embryo development. Microplastics in the placenta raise concerns about impacts on fetal health. So lastly, where might this lead? I don't like to speculate a lot, and I've kind of thrown out some like, who knows what the future is going to be like here? Maybe it'll be this crazy. Maybe we'll see like very minimal impacts, right? Maybe it is a slight increase in dementia occurrences. Maybe it is a percentage increase in cancer. But these are some of the ideas that researchers and scientists are saying, look, we're looking into this right now, but we think that it could affect the following areas: long-term health effects. So, prevailing concern is that chronic exposure may contribute to cancer, cardiovascular disease, autoimmune disorders, or neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. Why is it unverified? Well, these diseases take years to develop. It's hard to isolate microplastics as a direct cause due to countless confounding factors. So, yeah, maybe it is microplastics, and maybe it's something else. Nanoplastics may cross critical protective barriers. So, with the blood-brain barrier, potential effects on cognition, mood, and memory. Can you imagine a world where, everybody, which right now I think in the US it's something like one in five, if I'm correct, people are on an antidepressant. You can imagine where maybe that goes to two in five or three in five because it's affecting people's moods, their ability to feel happiness, cognition, and memory. So, yeah. Placental barrier impacting the fetal development, and then researchers are studying whether this could cause neurological development issues or learning disorders in children. Microplastics as chemical carriers. This is also called the Trojan horse effect. So, because microplastics can absorb and carry toxic chemicals in themselves, including heavy metals like mercury or lead, persistent organic pollutants, and pathogens, they're basically just feeding those into our body. They're carrying them. So, as we breathe in a piece, we breathe in some dust or whatever, and it feels normal, but it's introducing not just the chemical that the microplastic contains, but anything that could attach itself to that microplastic. It allows for bacteria or metals or whatever to cling to that surface And then that microplastic becomes a way to introduce those other items into our bodies. They may act as delivery vehicles, allowing harmful substances to enter cells and tissues more easily. So human fertility in the future, microplastics may reduce sperm quality, disrupt ovarian function, and increase reproductive disorders. Research into falling global fertility rates is starting to examine environmental contaminants like microplastics as potential contributors. And again, this research is just really beginning, so it may be years before we have true answers. Effects on the gut microbiome. Microplastics may disrupt the gut microbiome, which plays a central role in digestion, immunity, mood, and overall health. Could this contribute to rising cases of IBS, allergies, autoimmune diseases, or even mental health disorders? A couple more here. Cumulative and synergistic effects. Microplastics might not act alone, but could interact with other pollutants, medications, or lifestyle factors in ways that amplify harm. So maybe the way that those microplastics, you know, interact with the antidepressant that you're taking, or with the antihistamine you're taking, or with the Tylenol that you're taking, we don't know. Could it increase the capability of superbugs, right, to suppress antibiotics? This makes risk assessment much more complex and could reveal hidden dangers that aren't evident in isolated studies. And then lastly, genetic changes. This is speculative but active in the research. Some researchers are studying whether microplastic exposure could cause DNA damage or epigenetic changes, modifying gene expression without altering the DNA sequence. This could mean effects that span generations, especially if exposure occurs during pregnancy or early childhood. So microplastics are one of those, again, they're weird ones because it's always actively happening. There's no way to completely remove the risk of microplastic ingestion or entry into our bodies. It's going to happen. We can reduce it, obviously, by doing things like, you know, purifying the air in our homes, not drinking or eating from plastic containers, you know, reducing the types of clothes that we're wearing that contain microplastics. All those types of things are helpful. But microplastics are found in the most remote places on Earth, and we're not going to be able to avoid them completely. So at this point, it is a bit of a wait and see game, minimize exposure, and then trust in, you know, the research and hope that at some point there's some answers, and not only answers, but ways to maybe find out how to remove microplastics from our body or counteract their effects. Okay, thank you for joining today. Join us on Patreon. We're kicking it with the weekly episodes for weekly bonus episodes. I've been doing much better at keeping up with those every week. We're talking about newsworthy, current collapse-related events, specifically right now. Basically, every episode contains something that's going on in the political sphere because it is an active, moving, you know, piece of collapse, especially if you are in the U.S., So we are breaking that down piece by piece and talking about news relevant to that. But we also, every week, will pick something else in the news worldwide, whether it is something political, but more often it's something about climate change. It's a new piece of research that came out, you know, something on the social front, whatever it is. And we're talking about how those things basically are collapse manifested in our everyday lives. So join us there if you're able. Thank you so much for being here, and we will speak again next week.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So
If you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.